The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Welcome back to the program today. It is with great joy that I present my guest to you. Kathy Spurr is here, Miss Kathy, as she's known professionally. She is the wife of Thurlow Spurr and one of the organizers, a big event coming up on this coming Saturday at Calvary Orlando. It is called Christmas Is. You've been hearing about it on our radio, and it is, again, my pleasure to have Kathy here. Kathy, welcome to The Shepherd.
Thank you so much.
It is great to get to be with you. I've met you on one other occasion, but here we are today talking about not only Christmas Is, but just generally speaking, your relationship with God. How in the world did you come to know the Lord?
Well, I was raised in a little Mennonite village.
Really?
In Ohio, yes. And when I was 12, you know, they had you walk down the aisle and did all that, absolutely.
So would this be of the strict Mennonite traditions then?
Not so much. Okay. There were a lot of rules.
A lot of rules, I know. So Mennonite, there was a strong tradition.
Very.
Strong.
Music tradition.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so with instruments or without?
A piano and organ, but everybody learned how to sing a part. There was no unison. Men sang either tenor or bass. The women sang alto or soprano.
So you had the harmonies going on.
They were.
And this is ingrained in you from the time you were probably as long as you can remember.
It is. All those old wonderful hymns.
Yeah. So when did it translate into a personal relationship, knowledge of the Lord in your own heart, where you knew that it was more than just your family?
You know, it was just always what we did. If the church doors were open, we went. We had devotions as a family. So I was never, my heritage is wonderful. I wouldn't trade that for anything. But a personal relationship when I was about 12. And they did altar calls. And I went forward. And I always tell my students that I ask them if they think that they'll remember the day that they got married. And they look at me and go, well, sure. I said, well, why? Because that's a really life-changing, important day. I said, then you ought to remember the day that you asked Jesus into your heart. And if you don't, then you haven't.
Now, there are some people who would feel that They almost got drawn into the kingdom of God through osmosis. I mean, they were raised, they believed, and some people have an honest, difficult time. But I am not disagreeing with you on that. I think I remember I was 10 years old.
Sure.
And my family we had attended church, but it was just that. It was something that we went to. It wasn't something that we were. And I think there's a huge difference in attending a church. I mean, when I was in high school, the joke came out, you know, sitting in church doesn't make you a believer any more than being at McDonald's makes you a hamburger. I mean, that was the joke that everybody told back in that day. But, you know, it's so, there's some truth in that little corny cliche that it's not the fact that you were attending this, even in your community, among those that were in that Mennonite group. That does not mean that you have had a personal conversion, a salvation of your soul.
Absolutely. And my parents made it very clear that you didn't ride into heaven on anybody's coattails. When you meet Jesus, it's just the two of you. You don't get to get there just by being in that church or that house. Absolutely.
Was this a farming community?
It was.
Okay, so your dad was a farmer.
My dad was not. He went to college, and he was a dean of students in a large high school
really?
In the next town.
Okay.
But we lived on the family farm, And Grandma and Grandpa lived here. We lived a quarter of a mile on the corner, and Uncle Bob lived there, and the 80 acres were surrounding the mill.
That had to be great.
It was.
I grew up in a similar thing. My mom's mom and dad had moved up from Kentucky, and he parceled out an acre to each one of his kids. We had three of us, his kids, my mom being one of them, all around him. So mm-hmm. we got to grow up in a small little farming community like that.
Yep. Love it.
Yeah. So that's really great. And you get to see a part of life that I think most people in this day and age, they know nothing about.
Oh, no. I mean, it was nothing. If we had to walk home from school, we worked when we came home from school.
Maybe got up early to do some work, huh?
Absolutely. And I still have difficulty buying vegetables and fruit.
Because you grew them.
We grew them.
Mm-hmm.
And we canned and we froze them. And we butchered our own beef. And so it's not the same.
Right,
it
not the same.
It doesn't taste the same.
What kind of animals did you have around the farm?
We had dairy cows.
Mm-hmm. Now that's cool.
Yeah.
So you got to do the milking too?
Not me. No, not me.
I've never done that. You know, I can't imagine that. My granddad did have pigs. I don't know if you had pigs.
Oh, we had pigs across the street with that farmer. Not pleasant.
Yeah, we had chickens.
Yeah.
And so did any of your folks ever wrench the neck of a chicken? Did you ever see that done?
Shall I tell you how we did that?
Okay.
Really?
Do you want to go there? I'm there.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And
oh my goodness.
And then we'd clean them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Pluck them. That's it. We did all of that.
Hard job.
I watched the first time I ever saw that done was my grandmother, and I thought, that crazy chicken without its head. I mean, that's where the expression comes from.
It didn't stop running for a while, did it?
We had to chase it down. That was my job.
Oh.
I got to be the one that chased it down and retrieve it once it stopped.
Yep. But, we would do a lot of them in one day.
Mm.
A lot.
Mm. But there's nothing like farm fresh eggs in the morning and all of the fun stuff that goes along with living out there and the outdoors. You know, I really do believe that children today, kids today, who do not have an emphasis on being outside and who spend a lot of their growing up years, they're behind either a desk or in front of a TV screen and maybe playing games. They miss a lot of what that kind of background brings in your life.
Yeah. For sure.
I'm really grateful that I had that, and sounds like you did as well. So that was Ohio.
Yes.
Did you guys ever move around from there, or
no.
How did you get down to Florida?
I went to Asbury College.
Mm, Louisville.
Yep. And majored in vocal performance, and then I went on the road with one of Thurlow's groups.
So you were a singer in one of the, Festival of Praise, was it?
No, it was called Common Ground. It was like the Spurlows.
Mm-hmm.
Festival of Praise was way later.
Much later.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I quit my senior year. My parents were just devastated.
Mm.
So I went on the road for 2 years, came off, finished my last year.
Okay.
And then I went and got my master's degree in Bowling Green and moved to Nashville.
Is that Bowling Green, Ohio?
Ohio.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Then I moved to Nashville and I had my own studio.
Mm.
And
a working studio in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
That had to be pretty fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I've given, don't kid yourself, most of the entertainers take voice lessons.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not allowed to tell it.
Okay. So you taught voice lessons?
I did. And then I did studio work.
And you taught some of the country singers' voice lessons?
I did.
Anything you can talk about?
Well, I'll tell you, I was doing studio work, and I went, we were doing a demo, and one of the girls said to me, we need to write his name down. He's going to be famous. And I had just come from classical training. And I said, you've got to be kidding me.
And that guy, no way.
I wrote down Randy Travis.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sure enough, And then a friend of mine was the president of CBS Records. And I told him one day, he was so kind to me. I told him one day, you know, if you'd put me with Willie Nelson, I could get rid of that nasal sound. He said, Kathy, that nasal sound brings in millions of dollars a year.
It's his sound. You don't want to mess with trademark. That's great.
But, you know, I had never heard country music before I moved there.
That had to be a shock for somebody classically trained, someone who's grown up with really probably a good tradition of really beautiful choral music, harmonies, as you've described. And then you get to Nashville and then they break every rule. Not only the nasal aspects of some singers, that's not all. I'm a big country music lover. I love it too.
Yeah. I do too. But it had to grow on me.
Yeah. Some of the singers like Willie, he's had some timing issues on some of his songs too, about where you land and all of that. But boy, what a performer.
Yeah.
And he is a one of a kind.
So I wasn't going to mess with Willie's voice.
No, you don't mess with it. Yeah. You don't tweak that out. That could be bad for the business.
Oh my
goodness. We recorded, the first time I was ever in Nashville to record was at a place called Hilltop Studios. Did you know that place?
I don't know that.
Apparently it's a beautiful, now I understand it's a museum. They've kind of turned it in from a working studio because all of the changes that happened in recording. I mean, now a lot of these artists that you mentioned, they have home studios that probably would have excelled the quality of equipment back in that day in Nashville. But there still are some working studios that are pretty fantastic there.
There are.
Yeah.
There are.
So when did you leave Nashville?
So I stayed there 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I had a vacation home in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And that's where he always wanted to retire. And he had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So we moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on a golf course and he went to play golf every day. Well, we got there and about a week after we were there, they called me up and said, Kathy, you're going to have to come get him. He's playing the wrong way. So, yeah, it was rough. So he went fast.
Mm.
He just went fast. And in the meantime, we had adopted a little girl. I took care of foster babies.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know. They say, well, I was adopted at 3 months. Well, where were you from the hospital to those 3 months? They were at my house.
Mm.
So I took care of, and you usually didn't have them more than 3 months. When you got into 6 months, boy, that was tough to have to give them back.
Yeah, because you become attached and they're like, and that's why so many adoptions end up with adoptions.
Yes.
The fostering ends up with adoptions, I should say.
So we had adopted the last one and she was 4 when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
it's tough on a little one.
You know, she does not remember.
Mm.
She was just too little, too little. And then I married Thurlow and moved to Orlando.
That's right, because he was already here.
He was already here.
So that's how you got to Central Florida.
It is.
Yeah. And what was, that had to be kind of weird because you said that you started off singing in one of his ensembles way back when you were younger then.
Yeah, in my 20s.
Wow. That's a full circle in a really fun way to see all of that. You know, music has been, as we've already discussed, your life, but music for so many people, whether they're musicians or not, it is one of the most fun aspects of our lives. I do believe, I think there's not a finer gift that God's ever given to us than the gift of music.
I agree. I agree. It speaks to everyone's heart.
Now, you were a vocal performance major in college. Now, along with that, did you play an instrument too?
I play the piano.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you probably still use that now in
I do.
Yeah, all the time. That's great.
Yeah.
So this is really cool. Now, let's just jump in the balance of this segment. Then we'll talk about your academy in the next segment.
Okay.
But you've been a part of all of, as a performer, obviously, with Thurlow when you were younger, and now you've been a part of what he's doing. You guys have been busy through the years and putting on productions. And I get the idea that you're kind of a behind the scenes, in addition to being a performer, in addition to being a player, you're kind of like an administrator, aren't you?
I am, and I help produce the show and the choreography and all those different aspects.
Now, when you say choreography, so yes, you're talking about, there's a lot of movement. There's perhaps some dancing that goes on in
there
these
is.
Programs.
There okay. is. We have aerial artistry. So we'll have those girls climbing up that and twirling around. They told me they were going to do the death drop, which sounds awful to me.
that's a bad name.
Know,
they got to come up with something.
I know it. But yes, we have professional dancers. And then the kids from the academy that have trained with me all do choreography.
That's fun. And what kind of music do you use in your academy for that, those kinds of things?
Well, for the show, because we're always working towards a show, we may do a musical. We may do Music Man. We mm-hmm. may do Beauty and the Beast, Oklahoma. So we do those. And then we get ready to sing with the adults in these Christmas shows. We have a multi-generational choir.
Mm-hmm.
So in the academy, I have from 5-year-olds to 25-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn the Christmas music.
So Christmas music of all kinds, and that becomes or any other production. So it could be, like you said, a major Broadway type of a feel to it, depending
yep.
on the play or whatever. For this big event that's coming up on Saturday, I know you've got some gorgeous music that would be both traditional, and then there's some songs that would be newer type of Christmas standards too.
We have everything. You won't come here and not find something you like, from jazz to praise and worship to Broadway to New Orleans style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just have it all.
That's really fun. And, you know, I've heard, unfortunately, I'm going to be not able to attend being
oh, no.
out of town. But I know that you've got one of my favorite guitar players.
Do you know him?
I don't know him personally, but we've corresponded through YouTube.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Is he not something
he
else?
He is.
Walter Rodriguez.
Walter Rodriguez from South Florida.
Yep.
And he's one of the finest guitar players I've ever heard.
He is.
And he is going to just light it up in the lobby there at Calvary.
He is. He does that finger style.
Mm-hmm.
He's just incredible.
He's amazing. So that's all coming up. This is Christmas is what we're talking about. And that's going to be this coming Saturday, the 4th at Calvary. We'll have more information on that, as well as learning about Kathy's academy. That's pretty exciting. Kathy is with us today, Kathy Spurr, and we'll be back with her in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. In the studio with me today is Kathy Spurr, wife of Thurlow Spurr, and together they are producing the big event of the Christmas season for Central Florida. It's called Christmas Is, and it's going to be this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and doors will open, I believe, at 2, if I'm not mistaken.
At 2 for the pre-show.
The pre-show is not to be missed. We were talking at the end of segment 1 about a guitarist that's going to be performing in the pre-show, Walter Rodriguez. And I discovered this guy because he is a believer and he has some of the most amazing arrangements of classical and jazz. And he plays bossa nova style.
He
plays
it's
whatever.
Yeah.
Amazing bass lines with his playing as a good classical fingerstyle player would do. But I'm always thinking when I watch him play that the guy has rubber fingers. I've never seen anything like it. What he can do, the stretch that he has on that fretboard is nothing less than amazing. But what a dear person. And again, I've never met him face to face, but we've corresponded through just kind of meeting over YouTube. And you
wow.
do that in this day and age.
Yes. It's, yes.
It's some a way that you can get to know somebody. It's crazy. But, you know, your background has led you into music, and what a rich heritage that had to be growing up, learning to sing harmonies as a little girl. What part did you sing, or did you sing all of them?
I sing soprano, and now I sing second soprano.
Okay.
And I sing in the show. We've got six professional musicians that are the singers, and so we'll be performing every song.
So you're going to be one of the singers.
I am.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's great. That's wonderful. To get to do that. It's fun, as well as that way you're right there in the mix, and it's going to go. When you're directing and you're a producer, it's great to have hands on.
I always tell my teachers that I prefer a teacher that still performs.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a different perspective for the kids.
Now, this would be a fun question, because not too often do I get to have a professional, classically trained guest here on the program. What really makes the difference? We were talking in segment one about an artist like Willie Nelson, and I don't think Willie would mind us mentioning his name again. Any publicity, as they say, is good. But you have a big difference when you have a singer that is classically trained and someone that is maybe a performer. And they get up in country shows and they sing, but they don't know how to read music at all. And what's the difference when you have a classically trained musician that understands theory and the ins and outs of music?
Well, it gives you a different perspective. You talk to them, you communicate to them, because they know a different language. However, I will say the people that can play by ear, that's an incredible gift. Tammy Wynette's piano player in Nashville would put a piece of music in front of me and say, "Can you play that for me?" Sure. So I would sit down and play it. We would trade positions, and he would be all over that keyboard, couldn't read a note, hearing it once. Unbelievable talent.
Yeah, it's a different way of expressing ear playing like that, because they've got the theory in terms of the working knowledge of the theory, but they just don't call it, and they don't have the names for the different scales or the modes of music of theory. They would know. And I remember watching a documentary with Glenn Campbell, who by the way, did not know how to read music.
Wow.
But he was one of the greatest guitar players and was a session player out in L.A., in this big thing called the Wrecking Team, or Wrecking Group, I believe it was. They played on all of the great songs, like Frank Sinatra's Strangers in the Night session, and all the Beach Boys and all of these groups, Sonny and Cher, all of the hits. He played on a lot of those, yet he did not know how to read music. And if someone stuck a page down of notation, he would not know how to read it.
So how did he do that? Did he have to listen to it first?
Yeah.
Or did he use the number system?
Well, they use numbers. Mm-hmm. And again, he would just go in, and because he was so fast and so talented, he would hear something. And what the word that I got from, I never knew Glenn. I wish I could have known him, because I'm a big fan. But the thing that he was able to do was he was able to create on the spot these amazing lines and melodies, and his speed and accuracy, it was just amazing, and yet did not have that. But then you have those other players. Another player that would be similar and equally gifted in music, but has all of that ability. So that's got to be meaningful, to have somebody that can look. And you mentioned the word language. Music is, notated music is a language.
Absolutely.
It's like learning a foreign language.
It is.
And then your ability to look at one line, because I know that as a producer, you guys have to read multiple lines of staff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially when you have the orchestra.
Yes.
And you're reading lots of things at the same time.
Have you directed orchestras yourself?
I have.
Oh my goodness. That's too cool. So you have the baton and the whole routine down. I played in orchestra. That's why I got started in music. I played saxophone in an orchestra.
Really?
But I had my one line. That's what I did. And I stayed on the treble clef, and I never wandered over into the bass clef.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but it was a lot
good.
Of fun. So you incorporate, I know, that kind of thing. Tell us about Miss Kathy's Academy.
Miss Kathy's Academy was started within Concert Ministries because, number one, we had a daughter, and what was on the radio and what the kids were listening to, I didn't like.
Hmm. So would this be 90s or 80s?
2000.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then I get it. By then,
exactly.
Great music. Not as great.
So I wanted to also train kids and have quality productions that mm-hmm. honored Jesus. I don't believe just because it's a Christian show, you get by with not being good.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think you ought to be better. So there was no reason why we couldn't do even Music Man in Oklahoma and do it really well, but all of our work glorifying Jesus. And that's what I wanted to teach.
Hmm.
So that's what we do. I'm very strict. We don't have any excuses for not having it really well. God has perfect pitch. And he can read music.
Yes, he can.
And so.
He invented it.
That's right. And he knows when it's not good. And we're going to get as good as we can.
Hmm.
And I push him.
Mm-hmm. And it is possible to improve and grow and get better.
Oh, absolutely. Some of these kids have been with me for 11 years. And they really aged out. But they don't want to leave. Now, two of them got married this summer. One of them's gotten married and had a baby, and they're still in Miss Kathy's Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be here performing on Saturday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. They come from Detroit, St. Louis, Branson, and we started a group here.
Mm.
So all those kids, they collect their own money. They raise their own money to come down here and stay for that time. They take off work, they take off school, and they come to perform.
Now, the academy itself, is this an ongoing group? You mentioned that people age out, so obviously there are kind of like entry-level age requirements, and then typically speaking, once they hit a certain age, they're not a part of the classes. Does it operate on terms? How do you do that?
No, we go once a month to each location. So one weekend I go to Detroit, one weekend to St. Louis, one weekend to Branson, and I'm here one weekend.
So it's an intensive then.
It is very intense.
Mm-hmm.
And we go Friday night, Friday evenings, all day Saturday. And then when we get closer to the show, we go on Sundays too.
All right. So basically all of the academy then is aimed at a particular, it culminates in a performance.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
And
they have to learn how to practice on their own. They get a lot of things with a lot of choreography with videos.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll send MP3s and the charts, and they have to go home and learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Well, if a person wants to do something like that, they've got to invest the time into it.
Yes.
And that really, now it is frustrating, is it not, to have an event? I don't know how often this happens,
mm-hmm.
but you have an event and someone that you had arranged to be a part, and they didn't do the homework. That really shows. Does that happen ever?
No, because they know I'll cut them from the song.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They know that.
So they
come prepared, or they know they won't be in it.
Mm-hmm. Or they may as well not come.
Yeah, that's happened.
That's kind
too.
Of the bottom of
yeah.
The like bottom
I said,
line.
I'm strict.
Yeah.
Somebody described me as. Do you know who Mrs. Frizzle is?
No, I don't know that.
Well, the kids will know who she is. She takes kids. It's a cartoon, and she takes them on a magic school bus, and they have all sorts of adventures. And she's a little wacky and dresses really bright colors. And it's all geared around science things. So they say I'm part Miss frizzle because I take them on a wonderful adventure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part Judge Judy.
That name I know.
Because it's going to be my rules.
Right.
And I'm going to be strict.
Yeah.
But I'm fair.
Yeah.
And then part Barbie, because I think you ought to do it all in makeup and fake eyelashes and high heels.
Mm-hmm. So this is the full package of performance.
It is.
Everything from the visual, which you've just ended with that. There, an eye to detail, if you will. Done with excellence, you've mentioned
yes.
that. And so music is one of those things that if done correctly, it should sound excellent. It should sound right on because it's mathematic. I mean, music is mathematic. It's precise.
It is.
You don't round up. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people.
Well, if you round up, we would say you're sharp.
That's good. Oh, my. Well, if you can't be sharp, you be flat.
Yeah.
There you go. There's the old music joke.
So you'll see all those kids. There's about 75 of them coming in for the show on Saturday.
Mm. What kind of song will they do?
Well, they do a little bit of everything. The girls have a little sassy song about catching Santa. And then I will feature the little ones on Reindeer Jive, which is a 50s. And then we'll just keep adding more
like
reindeer.
Like a bebop type thing? Or?
Yes. And we just keep adding more reindeer and more reindeer. And finally, the oldest kids come out as couple dancers and jitterbug.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think. They're all in Act Two when we go to Bethlehem. Because when you go to that reunion, people would bring their children.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all participating in Act Two.
When you look back at these kind of programs, Kathy, and if you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Kathy Spurr, wife of Thurlow Spurr. She and Thurlow are involved in lots and lots of productions, not only in Central Florida, but around the nation, if not the world. And when you look back over your shoulder at some of the events that you've done, what bubbles up to the top as maybe one of the favorite things you've ever got to do?
I think one of my favorites is when we went on a 23-city tour with Sandy Patty, Larnell, and Dino. We called them the Big Three.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to direct a lot of that show.
That had to be something.
Well, I'll tell you what I had to do. I had my earbuds in both ears. I had to turn out their voices. I had to shut off their voices because every night they sang it just a little bit differently. And it was so interesting. Mm. And it sounded like the record. I mean, it was so well done that I was totally distracted listening to them. And I said, turn them off so I can direct the choir. That was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And iron sharpens iron, and they were,
yeah,
they brought it every night.
It really is amazing to see the kind of gifting that people like that. I mean, Larnell has been around a long time. I mentioned to Thurlow when he came, this would be back in the mid 80s. He was here for the Jesus Festival.
That's right. I sang backup.
Were you?
With Larnell.
Well, mm-hmm. That night I was the guy who introduced him. Yeah, on that, I was a part of a radio station here in town, and they asked me to be the MC for a Larnell. So I got to meet him backstage, and before we went out, and got to be the one that introduced him. That was as close as I could have ever imagined being near him, and it was very brief. I didn't get to talk with him, just mm-hmm. hello, and yeah, I'm going to introduce you. But boy, standing back from afar, and watching this man sing songs like But God.
Oh, my.
And
yes.
All of the duets he did with Sandy Patty.
Yes.
Than wonderful.
We did all those in that tour we took with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just incredible every night.
Now, you know Larnell up close. What do you think was the driver? What made, besides this amazing vocal gift, what made his singing, which it's almost like it's an event in and of itself, just to watch and the mood that he sets. What makes that possible?
He's a good storyteller. So his phrasing is very well done because he can tell a story. Not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's honest. and believes what he sings, and that comes across. I tell my kids that the audience wants to believe you. You have to be honest with them about what you're singing, or they won't pay attention. And Larnell is very genuine and tells a story and believes that story.
Ah, I think that's a good point. He believes it himself, mm-hmm. and he's been touched by the Lord himself. And it just shows and comes through. And boy, what an incredible performer he is, along with Sandy. And I know both of them are going to be virtually present
they
at
are.
The concert.
They're going to do More Than Wonderful.
Are they really?
Yes. And
now I'm sicker all over. Oh, my goodness.
And the pro ensemble will sing backup.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a great performance this coming Saturday, the 4th of December at Calvary Orlando. My guest today, Kathy Spurr, the producer, she and Thurlow, her husband, producing this thing, putting it together. You can find out more by going to christmasis.us, is it?
U.S.
Christmasis.us. Christmas is us, as
yes.
Thurlow said. And we'll be back with Kathy for one more segment. This is so much fun. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. This has been so much fun to get to talk to Kathy Spurr. Having had Thurlow up here and getting the kind of the backstory of Thurlow's life and realizing that you guys have both come into what you're doing in this day and age. You've come in with a lot of experience, both in the, I guess, church music world, but influenced by the wider mainstream sounds of jazz and all of the orchestra music that you guys put in. That was something that Thurlow brought. And I know he told us, not without some criticism in the church as well, because a lot of people thought he was too worldly with his arrangements.
Yes, we went, the group I was in that was Thurlow's Common Ground went to the Mennonite church, and they had never had drums in the church. And we set up our drum set, and they didn't like that. So we played with brushes only that night,
mm-hmm.
and that was still a big deal. So nobody applauded in church. It was very quiet. But yes, absolutely. He brought, you know, when you, where worship music is today, that started with him many, many, many years ago.
Yeah, he was a trailblazer.
Yes.
He was a pioneer, as it were, in music and took, the tough work. It's hard work doing what he did. And at times, standing alone with a lot of criticism and being told, no, you can't do that song here, but you can do this song. And what a day we all have now today where we're able to enjoy all of these things much more freely. But, you know, I still hear that kind of talk at times with certain groups of music, and there will still be the same kind of critics. Critics will always be there, right?
They will. You're accountable to God.
Right.
And so you have to deal with that and not, you know, you have to kind of brush it off.
Yeah, if I'm going to please somebody, I want to be a God pleaser,
yes.
as Petra Song used to say, not a man pleaser, but
right.
a God pleaser.
Yes.
And that's going to do it for you when you do that. Miss Kathy's Academy, this is open for people who want to grow and learn and become better musicians.
It is. And one of the things that is appealing about it is it's just once a month. You do have to go home and work on your own, but it's very, very intense. So we do... we do voice, we do drama, we do acting, and we learn the correct theater terms so that when I tell them, when we go into Tech Week this week, you won't hear me say, move over there. It's cross stage right.
Mm-hmm.
And
or upstage, downstage.
Yes, and mm-hmm. they're learning another language, but that's the way I communicate with them. They also, if they get criticized or corrected, they learn to say, thank you, Miss Kathy, because they know I love them and they're only getting criticism
mm-hmm.
so that they improve.
You know, you mentioned iron sharpens iron, and that's kind of been what you've learned in your own life, but that's what you're imparting. And I learned this, that when iron sharpens iron, it's a lesson I learned in shop class, that anytime you actually do that physically, I didn't realize how much that you could even sand iron, but you can.
You can.
There's sandpaper for iron, folks. And every time you do it, I noticed a couple of life principles. Number one, there's friction. Things get a little hot when you start sharpening iron with iron.
Yes.
Number two, there's going to be a little bit of fall away at the bottom. It's like sandpaper, only it's iron. And that stuff had to come off.
It did.
Because if it's going to be polished or if it's going to be changed in its shape.
And that's okay.
That's all right. It needs to happen. But those two principles, it's intense, it's hot, and there's going to be something cut off. But
yes,
that's growth.
That's great. Yeah,
that's,
I like that.
That's what happens when iron sharpens iron. You're going to get a little heat in the process. But that's good. And I think it's important that you illustrated that it's not because you're really demanding unreasonably so, but you love them enough to want to help them.
I do. And I think the culture today is everybody has to, you go to a birthday party, everybody gets a present. I don't like that. The present needs to go to the kids whose birthday it is. We don't always have to do everything on my child. You just need to tell them how wonderful they are. I don't agree with that.
I agree with you. We went to a basketball. I won't mention the group, but it was a basketball league that one of my daughters took part in. And we went to the year-end awards ceremony. And every kid was given a trophy. It was a participation trophy. Every one of them was rated 1,000. And so when you do that, there is no motivation to excel or be better. I just don't believe that that's the way God wants us to live.
I don't either. And I don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes a cultural shock for some people. And I say, you know, I'm not for everybody.
Yeah. Paul said to run to win. He didn't say run to take part. He said run to win. And there's an aspect about winning that means you have to beat others. And that is not, I'm not trying to be crude or rude.
Well, I think you have to be careful, especially with kids, that you don't give them something where you set them up to fail.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take a 5-year-old and ask a 5-year-old to do what my 10-year-olds do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll make that 5-year-old excel and be better than they ever imagined. Same with the 10, 20, 25, and even the adults.
Mm. How many years have you been doing this academy?
Well, since Nashville, so about 40.
Wow.
45.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you've been a few times around that block, and you learn some things that are really true.
Oh, you do. I look back and think, oh my goodness, people had grace with me when I was 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you remember always, and I have a feeling that all of your students will do the same for you. You remember those that had a real influence on your life, that really made a difference in the way you think or the way you performed, even the way you sing.
You know, he hears from his people that he, and they were kids then, and I do too, that are in their 40s now, mm-hmm. that write and say, oh, I learned so much from those lessons.
Now, one of those guys would be Bob Pickett, who's coming
Absolutely,
in.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I know Bob and Thurlow have been friends for many, many years, and Bob was an instrumental guy in Festival of Praise.
He was, yeah. I think Festival ran for 13 years, and Bob directed for most of those years.
Mm-hmm. And he's coming in from St. Louis.
He's
a part of Grace Church there, and Bob and I have been friends since the mid-80s. And he just a lovely guy. What a gift musically.
He's bringing with him about 20 of his choir, and they do, the St. Louis group learns the same show as mm-hmm. the Detroit group and Branson group and Orlando group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we can put them all together.
That's wonderful.
So they get in here tomorrow. We start rehearsals on Thursday. So we'll be busy Thursday and Friday, and then ready to go on Saturday.
Well, just prior to rehearsal beginning, Bob will be up here with us
Oh, good.
To record Thursday's program, which will air that same day. And I'm looking forward to having a bit of a reunion with Bob and Paula.
Yeah, you'll catch up with them.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And again, so gifted and so thankful for years of friendship that we've enjoyed. It's really been fun. You know, this event, Christmas Is, really encompasses both the telling of the story of Christmas, the real story of Christmas, and not, but it also includes some of the traditional things that people would think of, like Santa Claus.
Absolutely.
And all of the fun songs of the season. So it's got that entire package, but everything is Christ-centered ultimately.
It is. The first act is more secular. And then in the second act, we go to Bethlehem and we go to the inn where Jesus was born, in the stable. And the innkeeper is our host.
Mm.
And gathered there are all the people whose lives have been changed by Jesus. So we have the disciples, Peter, James, and John are there. I play Mary Magdalene, the woman that touched the hem of his garment. And we also have, and you may not know this, but you remember the thief that was on the cross?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus said, "Today I'll see you
in paradise."
Yes. Uh-huh. His wife is there. And she became a believer when her husband did on the cross.
Hmm.
So she'll give her testimony.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Blind Bartimaeus, Zacchaeus, the boy with his lunch. All those characters will come out because it's all about the changed life.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives were changed.
It's like a big reunion of all of the Bible characters.
It is. And one thing I like about the kids, because not all of them know those Bible stories from Miss Kathy's Academy. And so I get to tell them beforehand the story about the boy with the lunch. And they get so involved. I've had kids get saved.
Oh, wonderful.
During Act Two while they're performing.
How many years have you been doing Christmas Is?
This is the 49th year. We do a Christmas show every year.
Okay, but not the same one. That's
never
not,
the
right?
same.
Never
one.
The same. Okay, yeah.
Never the same.
Okay, we also know Tim Kaufman, who's coming up, and
yes.
I understand that he auditioned at your place,
he
you
did.
And Thurlow's place.
He did, and I'll tell you what, I really admire him. He is a pro.
Yes, he is,
and he is getting prepared. And I love that.
When he was here, Kathy, we did a song from your production. And so while it was playing, literally, we're putting it down in the program. He's singing along with it here in the studio. And it was marvelous.
Practice. I know. He's so good.
It was just
so
awesome.
So good. Yeah.
Oh, this is so great. So Christmas Is, it's going to begin. Now, we talked about the production. It actually starts at 3, but the door is open 2 for the pre-show. And what Thurlow described is that from the moment you park your car, you're going to hear music.
You are.
You're going to be already in the production, so to speak, even when you're walking toward the building.
Yes.
The Salvation Army band, the orchestra is going to be there.
They will. And then, Walter, when you come in and you go up the escalator, and to the right, there's going to be a photo op with Santa and the elves. And on the left, Victor Bowers is going to play the violin. And then when you walk in, we've got carolers that are dressed in Dickens costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's before the show even starts.
All of that before the show
yes,
begins.
Yes. And yesterday, I went in to Calvary and worked with the guys on the light show. And the girl that's doing the graphics for the LED mm-hmm. screen, it's just going to be gorgeous.
Yeah, it's going to really be a sensory explosion, really.
It when is.
Because you're seeing lighting and you're seeing just beautiful staging. And then you mix in all of the incredible music that's going to be there performed.
And costumes. I love costumes.
Mm-hmm.
We think people listen with their eyes. You go to see a concert. You don't go to, people don't say, "I'm going to go hear a concert." You buy the CD for that.
It's an event.
It is.
It's a whole body experience.
And that's Thurlow Spur.
That's right. He's been doing this for years.
Oh,
that's
my goodness.
Concert Ministries. I can't tell you how much fun it has been to have you up here, Kathy. Now, the website again is christmasis.us.
Yes.
And you can get tickets.
You can get
right
tickets
there.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Just click on the ornament.
And even though it's a big, beautiful auditorium, it will all just be so great. There's not a bad seat in that house.
There isn't.
And you're going to get to enjoy every aspect from the time you park the car to the time that the program begins and ends. You're going to love it. And we really do thank you for coming up here and
you're
trust
welcome.
That this will be a wonderful Christmas season for you and Thurlow.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It's been a joy. Kathy Spur, my guest today. And she directs Miss Kathy's Academy, part of The Big Christmas Is. And friends, we thank you for joining us as well. As always, we'll see you next time right here on The Shepherd.